90.1 FM KPFT in Houston. I am your host, Ernesto Aguilar. We have a very special guest with us this evening. Enrique of La Raza Unida Party is calling us. Can you tell us a little bit about La Raza Unida, what you're doing, and a little bit about the history of the organization?
Well, I'll go into the history first. La Raza Unida Party started in Texas formally, beginning to run candidates and actually take over city government in Cristal, get a lot of people elected in different places, and even run the first Chicano for governor, Ramsey Muniz. From there, other people began to organize and run elections in different places, California, here in Nuevo Mexico. And there was actually organized party chapters in 20 different states at one point. In 1981, after Ramsey failed to become governor, people became disillusioned with the process. And a lot of people became Democrats or failed to participate in elections and any of that at all. The organization became a community organization at that point, and we've been operating mostly in that form, though we do voter registration, and you can register for La Raza Unida Party in California and Nuevo Mexico, but I think in Texas they no longer allow that.
And that was a really concerted attempt, especially in the 70s, to try to close out La Raza Unida from actually getting access to the political process.
Yes, there's the Democratic Party started Mexican-American Democrats as a way to undermine La Raza Unida. A lot of the laws that the Green Party now is having a hard time in the Southwest getting on the ballot are laws that were put there to keep La Raza Unida off the ballot. As much as there are a lot of good people in the major parties, there was also a lot of making sure that their power wasn't challenged.
Can you tell us a little bit about the principles of La Raza Unida? What was the reason it really got started, and what principles have guided the organization up to today?
Well, the party got started because of the material conditions of Chicanos in the Southwest, basically being pushed out of any kind of power, very much the same way African heritage people were kept out of power in the South. And so the idea was to organize, and because in a lot of places we were numerically larger, that we could at least take power in those places. What's kept us going is just the sense that what we call the Chicano movement hasn't really been completed, in the sense that we still have a high dropout rate. We still end up in prison disproportionately. We end up in the military in the front lines, you know, at a higher rate than our population. And that all these things are things that we can change, and we believe we can change if we all work together.
What kind of organizing you are involved with now?
Now what we're doing is, in Nuevo Mexico, we're working on doing voter registration, since we can register people with La Raza Unida. And we do a lot of community education work. We'll do events with other political parties or other organizations that bring up a specific issue. And we also do direct work with youth. We have a youth committee here in Albuquerque that meets weekly, and they learn everything from Chicano history to learning about Gandhi and Martin Luther King and Che Guevara and Cesar Chavez and Emma Tenayuca and all these different people that have done different things, to hopefully kind of inspire them to continue to be involved as they get older.
What are the issues that you see La Raza Unida can definitely fill a vacuum in?
Well, I think the fact that basically the way we've looked at power is to jump on the bandwagon with either the Republicans or the Democrats. And we have a community power just from our numbers and the fact that there are still very solid Chicano communities that we can form our own power, not in the sense of the negative sense of what we see with a lot of the politicians, but a power in the sense that we can begin to rebuild some of our communities that have fallen apart, and a power that we can really guide and determine what we want for our communities.
Listening to what you're saying right now, and I can picture a listener who's sitting out listening to the radio right now going, well, the Democrats have done a lot for us. Even some of the Republicans are not courting us. We've made it, so to speak. Why should we be interested in La Raza Unida versus the Democrats and the Republicans? Because they're wonderful parties, is what somebody might say. What makes La Raza Unida important to people? Why should they be getting involved with La Raza Unida? And why is it critical to our history as well as our future, do you think?
Well, I believe that if you look at the reality, yes, the Democrats and the Republicans have done some things. They've put some people into positions. But if you look at the general condition for people who are of Mexican heritage, Chicano or Mexicano, we're basically in the same place as a community that we were in the 60s. It's just as our population has grown, so has the actual number of people who have gone to college. So it looks like we've made some progress. But as a whole, we're still basically in the same setup we were before. And that illusion that we've gained something is really kind of hard to deal with, because, you know, now we have comedians on TV, but comedians on TV really doesn't help the majority of our people who have to work two jobs to make ends meet, or, you know, those different kind of issues. So I think what we need to do is just look at how do we build up our community ourselves and make that our decision, as opposed to how do we let somebody else define what our community should be like so that they can get votes from us.
And that's an important distinction, because I think that a lot of people will look at things like, well, you have a Latino on television, or you've got George Bush wanting to speak Spanish or whatever. Those are real tokenistic kind of things. They're not really changing the material conditions that we're living in today.
That's right. You know, George Bush tries to speak Spanish, but he's enforcing a law that keeps hospitals that accept federal money from serving undocumented immigrants that Bill Clinton signed into law. So between the Republicans and Democrats, they set up this law. And so on one hand, yeah, he's trying to speak Spanish, so you'll vote for him. And on the other hand, people who are monolingual Spanish, he's made some direct efforts to keep them from having access to things in this country.
And you brought up another very, very good point. There have certainly been some strides the different parties have helped push forward, but do they change the material conditions that we're living in? The faces can be browner, but that doesn't necessarily make the policies any better at all. So La Raza Unida, from what you're saying, represents our interests as a people, economic interests, social interests, and all these kinds of things.
Yes, though not only are we aiming to try to do that for the Chicano community, but we see that benefiting the Chicano community, which is a mostly community made up of working people and working poor people, will also benefit other working people and other people who are on that edge between working and poor. You know, the African-American community, a large part of, you know, what we would call the white community or Anglo-American community, as well as Native communities and other communities that find themselves in those conditions, would benefit from the same policies.
A united kind of struggle is where you're coming from.
You know, ultimately, you have to get to the point that we're all humans, you know, and we all need to live together, because if we intentionally set out to hurt each other, then we have someone will try to do that in reverse at some point, and we just create a future conflict that way.
How did you get involved with La Raza Unida, and how has interest been all over the country to this kind of organizing?
I got involved in 1990, I believe, when I met a member of La Raza Unida at a National Chicano Student Conference in Denver. And I worked with him for a couple of years before I began to organize here in Albuquerque. And initially, all we did was do a youth committee here and teach young people Chicano history and about leaders and do different events and participate in events across the country. That's made a major difference in my life. As far as organizing around the country, we set it up through our website so that people can let us know they're interested and want to be members through the website. And so now we have people who are trying to figure out how to organize in Illinois and New Jersey and Florida. And these are not like professional organizers or necessarily college students who have experience in organizing through college. You know, we're made up of a lot of just regular people, everything from people who are college educated to people who have their GEDs, people who have no experience organizing, just the regular folks who are concerned about their community. And so the interest has been very good. And then we'll be in El Paso sometime in March.
And I want to remind people to get out a pen and a piece of paper and write down some information, because I'm going to be asking you some contact information as well as a little bit of details about the meeting coming up and how they can get involved in La Raza Unida. Getting back to the questions and some of the things you just said, one of the things you brought up is something that's really important, how organizing and how consciousness raising around identity and about one's place in history really does change your life. I've spoken with individuals in the past who've said things like, well, I was always raised to think the people who are just kind of hanging out on the corner, or who are working as janitors or who are cutting grass, are that way because they don't have education. And as you become involved and as you have your consciousness raised, you begin to understand how those people are in that position because of the way that society is set up.
Yes, I mean, there are people who, let's say, for instance, people who are looking for work from Mexico. I know a number of women who are nurses in Mexico who have to do, you know, house cleaning because the United States doesn't recognize their nursing license from Mexico. There's a gentleman that I work with who was a doctor in Vietnam, but the United States doesn't recognize his documentation, so he works as a translator, you know, making much less than he would if he would have been recognized as a doctor. Some of the things that we assume are stereotypes are kind of institutionalized boundaries that are there.
You touched a little bit on some of the victories that La Raza Unida won in Cristal and in other areas throughout the 70s. Can you tell people a little bit about some of the things that La Raza Unida did that they may see today that they might not even know was La Raza Unida?
I think there are a lot of community centers and a lot of people who are involved in different things now who started with La Raza Unida Party. There are people who are now elected Democrats who started with La Raza Unida Party and who still have some sense of community. Again, just the process of trying to be a third party is very difficult sometimes, and it disillusioned people. But a lot of people got their start there, a lot of directors of different organizations. Like I said, community centers, some community clinics here in Nuevo Mexico and in California that I know of were started by Raza Unida efforts. So there are these kind of seeds that have been planted in different places, and some took really strong bloom and others are still kind of struggling, but those were kind of things that came out and kind of continue to show us that something we were doing at that time was on the right track, and hopefully what we're doing now continues to go in a good direction.
And I think it's critical to remember that these centers and all these other types of projects that La Raza Unida initiated weren't as a result of large corporate endowments or whatever else, but you have community people, everyday people who are giving a little bit to help those kinds of projects begin. They did that in the 70s, they've done that through the 80s, and they're doing that today.
And actually now we, at least since my membership began in 1992, we've avoided all corporate sponsorship just on the basis of the fact that if you look at corporate sponsorship, they get a benefit of 2 or 3 times whatever you get because they write it off as a tax write-off. They get free advertising because they donated. And then you pay for it in the sense that you're buying their products initially. That's how they got their money. And then also we're the ones paying the taxes that they get to write off. And so it's worked better for us to just go ahead and invest directly in whatever we think we need to have as opposed to playing this charade that makes corporations look like they're doing something to benefit us.
That's a really excellent point, because you have organizations that may take corporate sponsorship, and as a result of that, you're right, the corporations get the free advertising, they also get the tax write-off, and ultimately you're right, we end up paying the taxes for the money that they end up giving in the first place, so it's a pretty vicious cycle when you really look at it.
Yeah, and it's something I'm not trying to criticize organizations, people get defensive, but if you really look at it, that's what happens. And it's not a criticism of people who take the money. It's very hard to come up with $25,000 or $50,000 or $100,000 at one chunk. But we feel that in the long run, it's better for us to go ahead and do what we can with $1,000 and to continue to be honest about where that's coming from and who is accountable to, than to be kind of left at the whim of, we have $25,000 and now we have to do what the corporation or the foundation says so that we can get another $25,000. You know, at some point you lose control because you're dependent on that money.
And if you're going to bring in that kind of money, it should probably be from the community, from the people who that community center or that project is most affecting, because those are ultimately the people you're really accountable to as an organization, I would presume.
That's what our effort is. If you look at statistics, they point out that individual donations are outweighing corporate donations in this country. And a lot of organizations, because we're a largely working and poorer community, don't like to go door-to-door and request money from people who we're trying to benefit. But if you look at, those are generally the people who give the money. So we need to kind of get over our sense of uneasiness about asking for money from our own people.
Well, if you want to be empowered and if you want to make an advance, sometimes you've got to give a little bit to get a lot more, especially in the future for your family and for the generations that come ahead of us. You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT in Houston. This is Sexto Sol. I'm your host, Ernesto Aguilar. We are speaking tonight with Enrique of La Raza Unida Party. He is involved in trying to organize new chapters of La Raza Unida. We're talking about empowerment. We're talking about a lot of other issues that relate directly to our communities. We're going to take a short break and come right back after this.